Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Now, I said we're going to stay on the environment track, and we are. And while lots and lots of folks are greening our lives at home, not that many are doing so when it comes to our vacations. Luckily, though, Martha Honey is thinking about this. She's executive director of the Center on Ecotourism and Sustainable Development in Washington, D.C., and she wrote the book, literally, on ecotourism 10 years ago. It's called Who Owns Paradise? Ecotourism and Sustainable Development. And the new edition is just out, where she revisits six different countries to look at how responsible tourism is in each place. So, Martha Honey, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you, Brian.
And you know, I should say, the other time that you were on this show, it was in the 90s when I interviewed you in Central America, where you were covering the wars in Nicaragua and Panama. How did you get interested in ecotourism?
Well, that's a good question. We lived first in Tanzania in East Africa for 10 years and then in Costa Rica for another 10 years, working, my husband and I, as foreign correspondents. And I was always intrigued. Obviously, journalists, particularly foreign correspondents, are travelers. And I was very intrigued by sort of the politics of tourism. And in fact, when we were in Tanzania, there was a very vigorous national debate, and I was doing my PhD at the university, and there was a debate there about, can tourism be done in ways that benefit poor countries? And Tanzania has some of the most marvelous game parks in the world, and Mount Kilimanjaro and so on. And then we moved on to Costa Rica, and when the wars in Central America ended and peace returned to the region and Oscar Arias, the president, got the Nobel Peace Prize, suddenly people began to look for other things to report on there. And it was really around the game parks, or the national parks in Costa Rica, and the wonderful biodiversity of that country that journalists got interested in, and then tourists began to return to the region. And we saw the rise in Costa Rica of what became known as ecotourism. So when I returned to the States, I was really fascinated by this subject. Could it be done in ways that really benefit poor communities, poor countries, and also the environment? And so I set out on this quest with my first edition of the book to try to find out whether or not there is such a thing as ecotourism.
And is there? I mean, just because you're going out into nature for a vacation doesn't make it ecotourism, correct?
Absolutely right. What I found when I looked at various countries around the world, and it was a whole span of them, from Cuba to South Africa to various East African and Costa Rica and so on, what I found was a real mixed grill of what is out there under the umbrella of ecotourism. Some of it, unfortunately, is just scam and sham and hype and greenwashing. A lot of it is what I've been referring to as ecotourism light. They're doing a couple of things that then they promote very vigorously, like not washing sheets and towels every day, and promote that as really greening their operations. But then there is genuine ecotourism, and I was really struck by finding tour operators, lodges, communities involved in trying to do tourism in ways that provide real tangible benefits to communities, to conservation, and are educational as well as enjoyable for the traveler. And I think that those are the three most important tenets of ecotourism. It's the environmental, the social, the give back to the community, and that it has a degree of learning as well as pleasure for the traveler.
You used the word in that answer, greenwashing. What's that?
Greenwashing is when companies, when businesses use green rhetoric in their marketing, say that they're environmental, the eco, pristine, and so on. But when you peel back what's really going on, it's nothing but a conventional tourism establishment that is not doing anything to be environmentally sensitive in terms of its business practices, socially responsible in terms of its labor practices, or giving back to the community. And so I think that, unfortunately, we've had a problem without real regulation of this industry. Tourism, by the way, is the largest industry in the world. And there needs to be, you know, much more vigorous sort of looking at it, because it is so important, particularly to developing countries. The 40 poorest countries in the world, tourism along with oil are their most important foreign exchange earners. So it's particularly important, really vitally important to developing countries. But in any case, one of the things that's happened in terms of greenwashing, and this is something that I've worked on over the last decade, is a growth of a whole variety of what are called green certification programs. These are certification programs that measure the environmental and social impacts of tourism businesses. And this is a way of sort of holding a company's feet to the fire and making sure that what they're claiming in their advertising, they're really doing. And they're doing it against a template of what are now increasingly globally accepted standards mm-hmm. for what constitutes really responsible tourism.
We do have about 10 minutes for calls on ecotourism for Martha Honey, author of the book, Ecotourism and Sustainable Development. If you perhaps have taken what you consider to be ecotourism vacations, call up and tell us about it. Where did you go? What did you hope to accomplish? Did you hope to actually do some good in addition to learning something? Are there standards even on conventional vacations? If you just go to a hotel in a city, do you look for certain environmental standards? So let's talk about ecotourism. Or any questions you have for Martha Honey, anybody in the travel or tourism industry want to call up on this? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Martha, that stat that you gave a minute ago, and of course you can comment or ask a question on our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. That stat you gave a minute ago blew me away. Tourism is the largest industry in the world?
Yes. Well, you know, it's very difficult to measure this. They're probably illegal industries that are bigger, but it is widely accepted as the largest legal industry in the world. Yes.
Wow. And so that's a reflection of how important it is to practice environmentally sustainable techniques when traveling, just because there's actually so much impact. Now, you look at several countries in this book, and you break it down by countries: Kenya, Costa Rica, South Africa, the Galapagos, and the United States. And guess which one I'm going to ask you about? The United States.
Oh, the United States. Okay, great.
Because I think when people think of ecotourism, the first things that they think of are, you know, going to the rainforest in Costa Rica, going on a safari in Kenya, going to the Galapagos in Darwin's footsteps, that kind of thing. But you can do ecotourism here at home?
Absolutely. And this is something really fascinating. I actually was involved in organizing the first conference on ecotourism in the U.S. a couple of years ago. It took place at Bar Harbor, Maine, and now it's become sort of a ritual. There's another one that's taking place with Canada, U.S. and Canada together in Vancouver, starting the end of this month. And I think that one of the things that happened is that actually a lot of people traveled overseas, went on ecotours in East Africa or in Costa Rica or wherever, Galapagos, as you said, and came back and began to ask for the same things, or in some cases start businesses based on those principles. So it was kind of like chickens coming home to roost. I mean, people began to take what they'd learned overseas and bring it back home. But also there is a homegrown element to it, and this is what I tried to explore in this chapter, which is new in this new edition on the U.S., where it's grown up around our national parks, and it's also grown up in sort of the peripheries of the U.S. The first ecotourism societies were actually in Alaska and Hawaii, largely because of the indigenous people, the Native Americans in both places, who really were both demanding that their rights be protected in the face of tourism, and there were particular sensitivities to land issues and so on involving indigenous people. And then it kind of moved from there, from our periphery, to the lower 48. And today we see it in all different varieties across the country. One of the fastest growing is what is called agrotourism. And this is basically, in part, people trying to protect their family farms by diversifying their income sources and moving into homestays, you know, a little bit of tourism and so on, and trying to teach people about why family farming is so important. We see it in West Virginia, where there's competition for the natural beauty of the place with the coal companies. And people in West Virginia have been trying to develop ecotourism to counter the operations of the coal companies.
Let's get a couple of callers in here. Did you want to finish that thought?
No, just that we also see it in ranches in the West, in Wyoming and Montana and so on, where people are trying to hold on to their ranches by going into tourism, ecotourism, socially responsible, environmentally responsible tourism.
Joanna in Rahway had an ecotourist honeymoon. Is that right, Joanna?
Well, partially ecotourist. Hi.
Hi.
I went to Bora Bora for my honeymoon, and we stayed at an eco-hotel, partially to try to save a little bit of money. And it was just a very mixed experience because the hotel, you know, one of their ecological functions was that they didn't have drinkable water in the rooms. But then you had to buy bottled water in Bora Bora, which is, of course, all shipped over the ocean in plastic bottles. And so it was a very mixed bag in terms of what you were really getting for your ecology.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're glad you went to Bora Bora and not Tora Bora, which could be a little more different. But Martha, what about that experience? And isn't ecotourism actually much more expensive? Because, you know, it costs the hotels or the other places more to maintain these standards?
Well, you know, I argue that it can actually be done at any level. I mean, a lot of the ecotourism resorts that sort of get play in Condé Nast Traveler magazine and, you know, other publications and so on are high-end. But really, ecotourism doesn't have to be more expensive. I mean, it can be simple, and it sounds like the place that Joanna stayed might have been fairly simple. And it can be low cost. And I think that one of the things that's really important for those of us involved in this field is to try to keep tourism as democratic as possible so that nationals can go to the wonderful parks within their country, so that people without a lot of income can also enjoy them. Now, obviously, there have to be sometimes limits on the number of people because you overwhelm places and destroy them. And I also think that these water bottles, plastic water bottles, are a huge problem in many countries. I mean, they just are filling up landfills and littering roadsides and so on all over the world. And so one of the challenges is to develop ones that will disintegrate. But I also do think that hotels should provide, you know, portable water for people to drink and not move away from using these plastic bottles.
Martha Honey, my guest for another few minutes on WNYC, author of the book Ecotourism. And just a quick update for our listeners on the status of our membership drive goal this hour. We're trying to get 250 calls or e-pledges by 12 o'clock, and we have just crossed 150. We're at 158, so thank you very much. And I'm not going to dwell on it now. I'm going to hope you just sort of do this, but we need 100 more calls to meet our goal at 1-888-376-WNYC by 12 o'clock. 1-888-376-9692 or pledge online at WNYC.org. Thank you all very much for supporting the station. Hopefully we can get another, 92 calls in by the top of the hour and keep us on track. And let's take another caller from Martha Honey. Susan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I'm going to be very quick. I had a business in Morocco, where I took small groups of Americans to the remote areas of Morocco. And I was trying not only to support the agribusiness in the area, the small farms, but also the people within the area. What I found, however, to my dismay, is that other travel groups that promote themselves, both in this country and England, for instance, hire inbound agencies in those countries who really mistreat their workers. They don't pay them wages. They have them rely on tips of the tourists coming in. And that is never dealt with.
Yeah. Let's get an answer. Martha?
I think that, thank you for raising that, Susan. I think that the issue of labor is extremely serious across the board in the tourism industry, and even in, unfortunately, too large a sector of the ecotourism industry, and it's not talked about. We talk about green travel, we talk about the environment and so on, and we don't talk about working conditions enough. And I thank you for raising it. It's clearly something that needs to, you know, needs to be done. We need to, and travelers, when they travel, need to ask about our What are workers being paid? Are they being paid a living wage, a fair wage? Are unions allowed in some of the bigger establishments and so on? All of these issues need to be raised up much more front and center to be of equal importance with the environmental issues that we're also concerned about.
So, Martha, here's a fundamental challenging you to your roots question from our comments page. Isn't it just more environmentally friendly to stay home?
You know, it may be, but I think there are other reasons that may not be wholly environmental for traveling. It is a great way to learn for the traveler if it's done well. And as I said earlier, it's extremely important to poor countries who rely very, very heavily on tourism. So for those two reasons, I think, you know, we have to travel smartly. We have to not take planes when we can pick modes of transportation that are, where possible, that have less environmental impact, try to pick hotels that are operating in ways that are environmentally and socially responsible, etc. But don't stop traveling. It is too important to us as human beings, and it's too important to poor communities and poor countries around the world.
Are there any places that you suggest not to go? And I'll tell you that the callers who are not going to have time for are saying, you know, all kinds of places that they've been. Newfoundland, a great place to go for ecotourism, someone says. Albania, tourism has risen 40%, since the fall of the Soviet bloc.
Right.
Belize, Maho Bay, Virgin Islands. Are there do you want to not go to some places because the governments are so bad? Or is there, you know, a place you might want to see that just can't do ecotourism?
Right.
Do you go there?
Absolutely. People have to be smart politically, environmentally, socially when they travel. There are places I think that you shouldn't go to. Burma today, I don't think you should go to. I think there are strong questions about Tibet and China. And, you know, we saw the tourism boycott against apartheid in South Africa that was one of the important elements in bringing down that regime. So it is important to think about the political implications of our travel and also the environmental. There are places in the world that are very, very fragile and should either have very limited number of tourists, very carefully controlled, or perhaps none. There are other parts of the world where the land belongs to indigenous people, and tourism needs to be asked for by the indigenous people. It can't just be companies coming in, as the woman Susan was saying,
right,
it was happening in Morocco, and just sort of barging in and taking over. It has to be negotiated fairly,
right,
with the local people, and sometimes local people will say no.
And that has to be the last word.
Martha, thank you, Brian.
Honey, her book Ecotourism, a Classic in the Field, is now updated 10 years later with a second edition, Ecotourism and Sustainable Development, published by the Island Press. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.